Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here. Welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with...
Coach Nick in person.
Coach Nick in person. Yes, Nick, how are you doing today?
Very good. Nice to see you in the flesh.
In the flesh, yes, yes. So we've defrosted out of lockdown in Melbourne, welcoming this nice cold weather, just refrozen ourselves. But yes, looking at the challenge, it is week six this week. So we're almost at that halfway mark. So yes, week six is halfway, but you know, week one, week two, week three, week four, week five, week six. And then at the end of week six, we'll be halfway. And then we've got week seven to 12. So, you know, always exciting times in the challenge. But you know, that first half of the challenge is almost kind of like setting ourselves up for that second half of the challenge, where we are slowly building habits, routines, behaviors, and then now in this last phase of the challenge, that last 6 weeks, is like that tail end. That's, you know, we start to see language being used like the magic is happening now. And really, my big advice for anybody listening is now it's time to do the work. The challenge honeymoon period is kind of coming to an end, where it's not really new and exciting. You know, now it's tough, right? Now it's time to grind, and now it's time to get the work done, because in 6 weeks time, that's 42 days, you will be a new person.
42 days. See, when you put it like that, that's different.
Yeah.
42 days.
42 days.
It's the same thing, but it just sounds more urgent.
Yeah.
I like
it. And look, we all know that 42 is the meaning of life, right?
I'm 42.
There you go. I'm not 42 yet, but no, you're like, I will be one day.
You're half hopefully. That.
Yeah. But look, you know, just speaking to some of you who may be coming into week six, and you may be looking at your progress so far, and you might be thinking, well, I'm not really seeing anything yet. Or maybe you're starting to see other people posting online on their journals, or maybe on Instagram or our Facebook group. And some people are posting awesome wins and big transformations. And you might be sitting there thinking like, well, what am I doing wrong? It's a great time to reflect on your journey so far. And, you know, it's okay to start again.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Any day is a good day to start again.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're at that spot now, halfway through, and you're like, oh, well, like I've kind of lost track a little bit. Maybe the challenge wasn't my priority. Maybe I fell off the diet a little bit, and maybe I missed a few training days. That's okay. Just reset, start again. And, you know, you can experience that kind of honeymoon phase where everything is exciting once again, right, at this stage for the next 6 weeks, the next 42 days.
Yep. So if you're listening and that applies to you, this is your sign, isn't it?
This is your sign
to
restart.
This is a sign.
Yes. But look, Nick, this episode this week is the Challenge Weekly Show number 23.
Ooh,
so 23. So we're coming close to 23, one a week. So we're getting close to like 6 months of the Challenge Weekly Show.
Oh my gosh, get this. That means that we've spent 23 hours together.
That's nearly a whole day.
So that means next week it'll be our 24-hour hanging out, talking anniversary. We've talked for 24 hours. That's awesome.
So if you'd like to listen to Coach Nick and I talk for a whole day, you can sit there and listen to every single episode of the Challenge Weekly Show, where we touch on a whole bunch of different topics.
We do. And we're just getting started.
Yes. So welcome to the Challenge Weekly Show, episode number 23. Yes. But look, Nick, tell me, how's your training coming along?
I feel really good. I'm in that sort of honeymoon phase where I'm reconnecting with the weights. The calories are up. I'm still in that. It's that really great time where you're still feeling pretty lean, but you're strong. So it's actually the best. It's far better than comp prep or anything like that. And you've got to not be too silly. I must not be too silly with my lifting, but everything's coming back. Muscles are filling out. I am feeling powerful. How about yourself?
Feeling powerful.
Yep.
Yeah. My training's coming along nicely.
Yes.
I'm enjoying my nice cold garage at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the last week of my meso cycle, so everything's a little bit heavier, closer to that, you know, 8, 9, 10 out of 10 RPE. And next week is that slight deload, which will be quite nice and looking forward to. Yeah. But, you know, my deadlifts are coming along, and I'm ready to whoop your butt.
Well, it sounds like, you know, if you're having a deload next week, I mean, look, we're getting closer to our comp, really, aren't we, where we've got to just power on.
Yeah.
So we've got to set a date for this, for our deadlift one rep max.
Yeah, I'd say probably the next meso would be nice, maybe like the next 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Okay.
It'd be good. So that's it. We're going to say 4 weeks from now.
4 weeks from now.
We're going to post a video of your one rep max on a deadlift, and we'll calculate our Wilks, and we'll see who the winner is.
See what happens. Go strong women.
Go strong women. Yes. And for anyone who's supporting Team Coach Steve, thanks for supporting Team Coach Steve. But hopefully Coach Nick can take out the deadlift competition.
Oh, that's nice. But team both of us, I reckon.
Team both of us. And Nick, what were you telling me this morning about this competition later this year?
Nothing much. I just might be doing another one of those things. I might be doing another one of those things. You know, the thing that I did earlier in the year. Another one of those things because they're quite addictive. So
they are.
That is why I need to get that deadlift in before I start prep again, theoretically. But yeah, I'm in a good place because, look, the more you do these things, the better your body composition actually ends up being, if you're serious about it. So it means you can start from a better place, less fat to drop. You know, I can continue. I keep saying you as though I'm detached from myself. I can continue to train the way I like to train for quite some time before I have to do the stuff that I don't enjoy as much, which is all the high reps and just, you know, no calories and just walking around like a skeleton. But yeah, so I might do it again, everybody. So that'd be fun. Yeah,
same category.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. I'd say yeah, fitness will be the one. Yeah, I won't be able to move up to figure or anything like that. There's no chance.
No. Well, not with that attitude.
No. They're huge. The young ones these days in these competitions, they are, I think it's just because they've been training from an early age and people are understanding training a little bit better for women, but they're huge. They are giants. It's actually epic to see. So I can't compete with the giants.
How good. No, that's exciting. So probably looking at later this year, maybe season B, so like October-ish.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So we'll go through all of this again.
Yeah.
And everybody can see, let's just say that I get some medals. I'll reveal them again. I might keep them next to me on the live this time so I don't have to actually walk away. Yep. But yeah, lots of good fun times.
No, that's exciting. It's exciting.
But I was telling everybody that I was going through a building phase and we're all doing it together. So let's just talk about that for the next 4 weeks. I promised, say, Maria and Sal, we're in it together.
Yeah.
But life is short.
Life is short.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've got life's to do, too big to be small.
Yeah,
right?
We've got to
that's
do
the
everything.
Max's logo.
Yeah, that's right. We've got to do, I was just thinking of Big V then, Big Vince with his boots. But we've got to embrace opportunities when they come our way. I don't know how much longer I have to be competitive in these things. I mean, probably forever, because I think that the older you get, the more muscle maturity you've got, things like that. Mm-hmm. Great. But yes, I can't say no. I'm a yes person. I'm like that Jim Carrey movie. I can't say no.
No, how exciting.
Yeah, very.
I've been thinking more lately of competing in powerlifting.
Oh, yeah.
And it's my buddy who recently competed in powerlifting, and he's been in my ear about doing it. And yeah, ooh. I don't know. It's been the loads have been moving nicely in the garage. Yeah, I don't know. Just been thinking about it.
It fired you up the whole idea of having to even think about competing in that deadlift, and then suddenly, well, you do train your big three movements. You do very well. I think that'd be good.
Well, like I did go through that period, maybe this time last year, where I was mainly training the big three. Then I transitioned a little bit into Olympic weightlifting, and then I transitioned into a bit more like hypertrophy work. And then now through that solid building phase, building some muscle mass through that hypertrophy phase, now I'm kind of in this strength cycle. And I've only done two meso cycles. I'm really like saying hello to my previous personal bests, right? So that's after a year of non-focusing on strength, focusing on building muscle and those types of things, or focusing on Olympic lifting and those types of stuff. Just after two mesos, as in like just 2 months of training, saying hello to those personal bests. So it's exciting to see where I can kind of take this little phase. And, you know, if I could pull that quarter ton, would be quite nice on a deadlift, or even that on a squat would be pretty cool. Yeah. And like with the bench press, talking about that, like I've always played around with that 150 and I always like just missed it, or like, you know, pressed it, but I had to have a little bit of help, or like the hips lift up or something like that. So it'd be nice to really like knock that out of the park and push like a 160 on the bench. Yeah, so these are like targets I'm thinking, oh, I'd love to do that soon. Yeah, who knows?
I think it's a necessity for you.
Yeah. Just to kick that in the can.
Absolutely. Yeah. And look, that's something that you can easily do around having the baby. You really have to just lift as you do and eat as you do. So it's not going to annoy anyone.
That's going to be exciting. Yeah. Well, look, let's talk about some non-scale victories.
All right.
So do you have any this week?
I do, because you know what's been fantastic? People have actually been using the hashtag NSV, so it's really easy for me to find it if I don't see it on the day. So I appreciate that mm-hmm. because then I get to see these awesome things. So we've got Lana Karate. And what I love about this one is that she's had some pajamas sitting in her drawer for 12 years that now fit. Now, that is a massive victory because mm-hmm. I love the fact that she was holding on to those, just knowing that something in her would eventually click where she got it to the point where she could fit into those. And it's this, and it's now. So, Lana, that's amazing. I loved seeing that. Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, especially really for 12
cool.
years.
I know, like, 12 years.
I'd reach that point where I'd throw it out. Like, I'd get rid of it, but to hold on to it for 12 years is really cool.
Yeah, I know, because she just knew. She knew. And the thing is, the only time that change is going to be sustainable and reachable is when you have decided that you have had enough of staying in that position, and it doesn't matter if it's 12 years, you know, because it's done now. So well done. I love it. The other one I have is my live buddy. She comes to the lives, so it's great. Adriana Cullen. She was talking about her daughter learning about salad making and the process of salad making and what you can put in salads and how exciting veggies can be, which is so good for children to learn from an early age, just about flavor and colors and textures of vegetables, and that they're not scary and that they don't always have to be cooked. They can be raw, they can be pretty, and salad making can actually be a nice thing to do as a family because you can add what you want and take away what other people don't want, because there's always someone who doesn't like something. So a salad, like an idea for a you know, a family night, is something that we do is to have some mince and then all sorts of different veggies and stuff and put it all together as you want, so you can build your own dinner. So
kind of like a little taco.
Exactly. Yeah, just sort of deconstructed tacos, because some people in my family don't even like the taco bits.
How dare they?
I know. So like I just put it all out there instead of trying to force a taco upon somebody. How dare I? You know, I just like to give them as much variety as possible. So that reminded me of, yeah, just a family getting together. And also because Adriana has a number of kids, so I can understand from her perspective, it would be hard to get them all involved and enthusiastic. And it's good because they are inspired by their mum. So it's the best.
Oh, beautiful. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple.
Yep.
The first one goes out to Tristan Grossman. Hopefully I pronounced Tristan's name correct. I've got a really close friend of mine and his name is spelled the same way, but he's adamant that it's pronounced Tristan.
Really?
Right? Yeah. We all think he's crazy. I don't even know if he knows how to say his own name. But my buddy Tristan, he's actually like my physiology guy. So whenever I have physiology questions, I give Tristan a call.
He's the man behind.
But yeah. So when Tristan. If I don't know an answer, I often go to my buddy Tristan. But yeah, Tristan Grossman, he made a post on our Facebook group and used the hashtag NSV, NSV. And this is a quote. He's like, one of my hashtag NSVs was being able to jump on my slack line this week and had way more endurance than I've had before. Mm-hmm. And I put on a pair of maintenance work pants that are too loose now. Damn, looks like I need to buy a new pair of clothes soon. So that was Tristan's. I almost said Tristan. Well, Tristan's non-scale victory, being able to have more endurance on the slack line. And then now his pants are too loose for him. He's going to have to buy some new pants.
That's very exciting.
Yes.
Very excited for you.
Now the next one goes out to Michelle Hext. And she says that she's 35 days into her 75-day hard challenge. And I think that was really cool because the idea of that challenge is to do something hard every day for 75 days, or to lean into something that's difficult.
Yeah.
And she's 35 days in. And I think for her, what was difficult for her was she wanted to be really consistent with her nutrition, really consistent with her training. I think she made a goal to train every single day. And of course, we know that there might be some weaknesses to that, but that's not the point of this, where she's using something like this challenge and trying to keep herself accountable every single day. And it's almost like you get in this role where the next day you don't want to give up because you've just ruined your 35-day streak. And there's lots of ways to do that. You know, you can get like a little tally on a board and you keep crossing it off. Maybe you have like a calendar and you put a big cross over the day that you've, you know, accomplished a day, or you've hit whatever it is. But it doesn't need to be like a hard challenge. It could be something as simple as a habit change. Like you want to drink one glass of water with dinner, or you want to maybe put your shoes on, go for a walk every day in the morning, and you cross it off. And if you kind of go into that idea of being on a roll, kind of get into this kind of like sunk cost fallacy where you don't want to lose like your progress, where you don't want to be like, oh, I don't want to start again. So I think it was really cool that she's posted about that. She's 35 days in and hopefully she's able to smash out the next 40 days.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, when you spend a long time doing something day after day, it just does become part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. that's a really good way to make it something that you don't even think about doing anymore. It's just part of what you do.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something so like satisfying about, you know, ticking it off or crossing it off.
I agree. Yeah, that visual thing. It's very powerful.
Now, look, Nick, let's move into our coach's corner for the week. So in coach's corner, we're just going to talk about our coaching tip for mm-hmm. the week. So, Nick, do you want to kick us off?
Yes. So I have spoken about this previously, but I think it's always worth touching upon. So training and the menstrual cycle. So firstly, I just wanted to say, like, we always, you know, most textbooks, most anything say that the menstrual cycle is 28 days long. Now, that is not necessarily true. That's just the average. So everybody's got a different menstrual cycle, and people will know sometimes theirs lasts longer, sometimes it's shorter. Everybody's different. Just it's the same as anything else. Everybody's different. But there are phases in our menstrual cycle that we can talk about. So if it doesn't quite tee up with your timeline, if you're listening to this, that doesn't mean that it's not appropriate. And also the other thing is, there's all this data. There are things that you can find out about that may work. But if everything's working well for you, I wouldn't worry about changing anything too much. It's just more about learning to understand your body's cues and maybe understanding why your body might be doing certain things around your menstrual cycle. So the usual one that everyone says is feeling a little bit hungrier before the period and that kind of thing. Now, that's been done. And it's like, sure, you can eat more around that. But I'm just talking more about what to eat around training in the different phases. So just from when you have your period, that phase is called the follicular phase. And your estrogen is going to be higher. It's going to go up. So that actually makes us more carb sensitive. And apparently they say this, and I'm a bit unsure, but they say from day one, your strength starts going up from day one of your period. Now, I don't know these boss people that think that their strength goes up on day one. For me, like, I would say give me a good couple of days to get over that, because I like to rest a little bit. But apparently within the body, that is the time to start to amp up your training. So I personally, 5 or 6 days after, I'm a boss for like the first maybe 14 or so days after that until ovulation. And then I actually know that things start to go a little bit downhill for me just within those 2 weeks. But that doesn't mean you have to waste the 2 weeks either.
Mm-hmm.
So that's called the luteal phase. And that's where, so in the follicular phase, you can actually technically eat more carbs. So it's going to be useful for you. You're going to burn through it. It's mm-hmm. a great time. And then, in the luteal phase, that's when you are sort of better with your fats and your proteins and things to fuel mm-hmm. your training.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
So through the luteal phase, would you be better off going through, like, let's say, like a deload?
Yeah.
And then in your follicular phase, you'd go through like a peak week or something.
Yeah. If you were to time your meso. If you could time it. I mean, the other thing is, like, you've got to also know how you react. Because, like, I reckon, see, before I actually researched all of this, I actually had some of my best sessions just before getting my period.
Mm.
So the thing is, it may also be then you could also look at maybe you eat a little bit more around that time just naturally. So, you know, that's actually going to amp up your activity level and amp up your energy. But now that I'm trying to stick with it a little bit more, I can sort of see that for me, like, my body utilizes the carbs quite well in terms of like my way of, apart from actually getting good numbers in the training, is also I can sort of see bits of my body like abs and things like that, that if I was going to eat it in the second half, like go crazy with my food, not that I go crazy, but just a little bit more carbs, things like that, I would actually possibly not be able to look necessarily as lean. So I can relate to this. Mm-hmm. And also, yeah, just in terms of, like, we see more and more women in the gym training now. So just to be aware that we're not, I mean, the quote that's going around with a lot of people saying, we're not small men. Mm. So just to remember that, yeah, something like you just suggested would be perfect, you know, and to just be mindful of that. So it's really, if your numbers are suffering or you're not quite sure what's going on, or you just wake up super fatigued. Sometimes we see people on the Facebook page talking about, I'm fatigued and I don't know why. Just have a think about where you might be in that cycle and maybe fuel up appropriately for that particular phase.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Sounds good. Interesting.
Yeah, it's important to just to talk about it because we do have so many women in our group, you know, all the vaccines.
Yeah, I guess I don't experience a period or ovulation.
No.
But I guess it's always great to be tracking that information.
Definitely.
So then you can start to find answers as to why.
Yeah.
Because you might wake up and you're expecting to PB on your squat, but then you don't, but then you find out that you're in your luteal phase and you're like, okay, what if I tried it again in 2 weeks? Would that make a big difference?
We just always say that it's, you know, mind over matter, but sometimes it's also your body is going to stop you. And I think that that's just, it's actually just very fair to understand. And also like as a coach, maybe like if any coaches are listening to this, if you do train females, it's a good idea if you're one-on-one, good idea to try and program them around their cycle, because you'll probably find that the results that you're after are going to come quicker, which is actually going to help you as a coach as well, so you're not stalling.
Yeah, it's almost like making yourself in line with the physiology, that you're not fighting it, you're going with it.
Correct. And I must say I spent my whole 20s not being in line with any type of my physiology whatsoever. So I mean, you can still do things. It's just that if you really want some answers as to what's going on, even down to when we were speaking about the bloating, things like that, just have a look at articles on training around your menstrual cycle, and you'll find that it's quite interesting. Yeah, just worth thinking about. And yeah, you know, as a coach, even for you, you know, people that you do coach, or even the other, now this could be completely anecdotal and you might shut me down and I'm happy for that, but you actually feel a little bit more pain in the luteal phase. So I'll just for example, if you are going, this is so female thing, just say you're going to get your legs waxed, but sometimes it hurts more than other times. Look at where you're in the face. But when I had my leg veins done, I had laser and there was not much anesthetic whatsoever. And I had to have it over a course of a few weeks, and obviously was in different phases. Sometimes I was a boss. I was like, this doesn't hurt. This is fantastic. Other times I was like, ow, for everything. So your level of pain can actually change as you get closer to your period. I guess it's because we're supposed to rest. Don't know. But just very interesting. And so therefore, you know, your perception of pain, maybe it might not let you do your one rep max. You might go, this is too heavy.
Interesting.
I think so.
All right. I guess I wanted to touch on the idea of what is a rep and the idea of standardizing each repetition. And I think this is important because a single rep, when you're training, every rep is basically the standard unit, like the most smallest unit of training. And if we were to compare it to, so let's say, nutrition, sure, we've got our macronutrients like proteins, carbs, and fats, but then that's broken down essentially to a calorie, how we measure energy. And the same could be said about a repetition in the gym. And a reflective process to go through now is this idea of making every single rep that you do standardized so that it's similar. And an example would be something like, let's say, currency. Every different currency around the world, from monetary currency like fiat to, you know, cryptocurrencies and all those bits and pieces, they have different purchasing power. So each currency is slightly different. Even though it's the same thing, we go, oh yeah, it's currency, but it has different power. Because you couldn't compare a US dollar to a euro to an Australian dollar to an Indonesian rupee to a Mexican peso. They're all very different. And the same thing with a rep, where every rep that you do, unless you're actively trying to standardize it, can be different. And then every person's going to have a different rep, unless they're thinking about it, to another person. And some examples could be, let's say, the range of motion. And maybe an easy one to visualize is like a bicep curl. If you are cutting the bicep curl short, maybe you're going up halfway. So you're going up halfway and then back down to that starting point. Then the person next to you goes the whole way up and the whole way down. You could almost say that they're doing twice the amount of work you are. So their baseline of a rep is higher than yours. So if you say that you're going to do 10 reps of a bicep curl versus the person next to you is going to do 10 reps, they're two very different sets because the individual unit is very different. So that's one variable to think about, is that range of motion. Other things you can think about is, let's say, the speed. So in a bicep curl, if you were to move the dumbbell really, really quickly versus really slowly, two very different experiences. If maybe you were to curl the dumbbell up really quick and then drop it, you're getting rid of that whole eccentric phase of the motion so that you're only doing half the movement. You're going up and then you're not caring about the lowering phase. Other things you could think about is, let's say, you know, momentum, the the path of the weight that's moving in, or even like where you're placing the load, because you can change the load from going into the muscle tissue into connective tissue. And you see that really good in, let's say, a squat, where some individuals who have a bit more range of motion would kind of do like a bit of a quote, like a stripper squat, or like they'll bottom out in the squat where they lower themselves out and they've got muscle tissue, and then they flop into their connective tissue and they bring themselves back up. So that repetition is going to be very different to if you're staying just in that muscle range of motion completely. So just a reflective process for you listening to this is, are you standardizing every single rep? And what I like to do when I'm lifting is to think of like a target, you know, like maybe an archer's target, where I'm trying to aim in the same spot every time. And sure, maybe where I hit on that target is a little bit off, but each repetition I want to be exactly the same, where I'm trying to standardize my range of motion, trying to standardize the speed, trying to standardize the path of the load, if it's going straight up and down or maybe in the same curve each time. And I do this through reflection and mainly through filming myself.
Right? That's how you do it. Yeah.
That's filming, how I do it. Yeah. So I guess firstly, while I'm doing it, I visualize it where I'm trying to like hit that target each time, or maybe think of like a pendulum, you know, how it swings and it swings in the same spot each time. Swing, swing. You don't watch a pendulum and it swings like, you know, to 90 degrees and then to 45 and then 10 and then back up to 90. You know, it's equal each side. That's kind of how I think about doing movements. Let's say like, you know, your squats, your bench press, your deadlift, like each movement is the same. And it was funny where my partner Laura was making a comment about videos that I posted on Instagram. And I think I was doing a deadlift.
Yes.
And she messaged me privately and she goes, I think you uploaded the video three times. I was like, no, that was three different sets.
Yeah.
So to her eyes, they looked exactly the same, the three videos. To my eyes, they were different. You know,
different weights.
No, they were the same weight. Same weight. But like my face gesture was different. Yeah. The music was different. Yeah. Like, you know, I had my hoodie off for one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So like for her, she was like, you posted the same video. And that's the idea, where each video was meant to be exactly the same and you could put them all on top of each other and not notice a difference.
That's sort of that's respecting the movement as well. That's really like crafting it and really spending time with it. That's the only way that you can end up standardizing your reps. You've got to spend time, don't you?
And you think of any sport that you may follow, from like, I don't know, cricket to footy to swimming, like you watch athletes perform and each time is effortless and it looks identical, you know, because they've practiced the same thing. You know, they've practiced that free throw so many times, they've practiced that penalty kick so many times, you know, they've practiced that throw, the shot, whatever they're doing, so many times that it becomes standardized and uniform and it doesn't look any different from the rest. And that's the approach that we want to take when we're weightlifting or training, is to standardize every single repetition. And sometimes, you know, we're not even thinking about it, we're just focusing on kind of moving the load from A to B. We're not really thinking about how we move there and if each time is the same.
I've got a good cue for the bench press for that. And that is if your gym has, like if you look at our ceilings here, they have a line. So I'll often, if I'm using a particular bench press, I'll try and line up with the line because I know that that's exactly where I need to be. One time they did move the bench press a little bit. This feels weird. The line isn't, the ceiling's moved. It's not in the right place.
I think the worst is when you go onto a bench and it's not in line with those lines and you look up and it's on a slight angle and you're like, I can't bench this.
Yeah. It feels weird. Yeah.
It's like, I remember my time swimming. So I used to swim when I was younger in like a squad and we'd do backstroke and you'd look up at the ceiling and sometimes the lines don't match up. So you're backstroking on like this angle and you hit like the rope and anyway.
But yeah, that's a good way to, you know, pick a point if you don't want to film yourself. Although I think everybody should, there's a bit of a movement out there about you know, enjoy having the tripod at the gym. I don't think it's called that. That's not the hashtag, but it's like, bring your tripod out and be proud of it. Be proud of filming yourself, because it actually gives you information.
It does.
So if you're not in your garage gym, if you're out in the gym, you're absolutely allowed to film yourself doing what you're doing, because that's how you get better. Because how are you supposed to know?
But that was my tip for the week, is to think about standardizing each repetition and make it look identical.
The other thing is also, I was going to just say one more thing just to add. It also depends, say with a deadlift, it's going to depend on the length of your levers and other things like that as well. So you've got to find your own standard, you know, within. So it's not like standard for the world. Standardize it for yourself as well. So don't compare yourself just because someone moves it in a certain way that you're watching on Instagram. You've got to feel it out yourself, don't you?
Yeah. And a good example would be something like, let's say, maybe a stiff-legged deadlift, where you might not have the the mobility to go down as low as someone else.
Yeah, some people touch the floor with it.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter like what your standard rep is. Exactly. It's, you know, your standard rep.
As long as you are repeating that and making it into your own craft, I guess.
And I do think we start to face problems when each rep is different to each one, because then you go, well, every rep was different and every range of motion was different. The speed was different. You're dropping the load here. You're bouncing off your connective tissues there and you're basically, you know, cheating, using momentum for the half a set. So then how do you know that that set was as effective as the previous set?
Definitely.
Right?
See, I know with my bench, I still sometimes struggle with one shoulder coming up a little bit. And it's like, I always just think it's never perfect, but it's sort of like, I just always think it hasn't been done yet until I can do it right. So I've got a lot of work to do on my bench press.
Yeah, the good old bench press.
Yeah.
And that kind of like bleeds over into some fears that people have of injuring themselves, where the biggest place of injury is when we move outside of our training zone. So if your range of motion is, let's say, 0 to 100 is your range of motion, and you've been training that 0 to 100 for years, as soon as you take that load that you use 0 to 100 in and take it to maybe 105, that's uncharted territory. You might not have the strength and the capacity to manage that load there. That's when you're likely to face that injury. So if you were to standardize every repetition where you know every single time you're hitting that 100 and back, you're unlikely to move into that 105 and then face some troubles or problems there. So let's move into some questions that have popped up this week.
Okay.
So, Nick, do you want to take us off with this first question, which was, how often should I change my meals?
Right. Yes. This is very interesting because as children, we were probably, taught, or even from say that the nutrition pyramid and things, it's very colourful. It's got a whole bunch of foods on it. We get foods thrown at us in advertising. We're encouraged to consume things quickly and sort of just not stay with the same thing for whatever reason. So, and also I think that we hear a lot about people quote unquote getting bored of things. So I think I've even written something on what bored is. I don't really understand what bored is, because for me food is food. So if it tastes nice once, it's going to taste nice the next 5 or 6 days. I know what I like. So for me, I don't think that you need to particularly change your meals, especially in just say a 12-week block. I think that you could pretty much, if you're happy, eat the same thing every day. And what does that do? It gives us really good data about you. You'll pretty quickly know. The best thing about it is that it gives you power, because you'll pretty quickly know what is causing you to feel a little bit of discomfort if you're only eating a certain amount of foods, within, or meals, or then it also gives you the chance to play around with other variables. If you've got the same food, you might be able to then time that food differently within the day. But you don't want to play around with too many variables at once. So I personally think that the simpler the better in this. It's so much information overload with the challenge, with learning all sorts of different things. And when you see your nutrition template, because you're probably expecting to see that you're only allowed to eat one thing ever, but then you've got all this variety and it kind of freaks you out at first. It's like going into a department store that everything's on sale and you've got money and you don't know where to go first. You know that thing? Like, you know when you're actually shopping and you've got money and everything's on sale and you think everything's great, but then if you take the time and you breathe and you go through it, there's usually only one or two items that are actually of value, that it's overwhelming at first. So that's the same as with your food. You don't need to change it up just for the sake of it, or because you see pretty foods on people's Instagrams and things like that. You don't have to. It is good to, obviously eat the rainbow. You want to eat different colours. You want to get different micronutrients out of different veggies and fruits and things like that. But in terms of how often, I don't personally think that you need to very often. That's me. But I know my husband, Shane, he likes to eat different things all the time and has always. So meal prep would be impossible for him because he really, in his head, has to eat different things all the time. I don't know really how he does it. I think that that's a bit of a headache, to be honest with you. So what I will do is, if he wants variety, apart from telling him to cook it himself, which is absolutely fine, but I will make the basic things like the basic proteins, and then just basic, then just say like you can add this to it or that to it, and make the variety in that way. But I think it's like building a house. You know, you've got to have the good foundations. You have your nice proteins, and then you can add things to it from there. But I don't personally think that you should change your meals too often, because I think that you need to be able to measure things, and what is managed can be measured. Yeah.
No, I completely agree. And I think that it's important to practice, you know, that portion control side of things. If you have a different meal every single time, you're not really practicing measuring, let's say, rice, for example, mm-hmm. or measuring cooked chicken or measuring your oats and those types of things. If you're looking for a new recipe every single time, you may lose that skill of being able to kind of eyeball certain foods. Yeah. And if you were eating the same thing over and over again, you know, practicing meal prep, I think there's a reason why like bodybuilders tend to follow these like really simple meals where everything's uniform, standardized. Mm-hmm. And if they were going to, let's say, face a weight loss plateau where they're not seeing any further weight loss, it's like, great, I can just take exactly what I'm eating now and reduce it by 5%, 10%. Exactly. And it's really easy to make that small minor adjustment because every meal is the same. But if you're having a new fancy recipe every single time, there's less certainty that you are having this many calories per day. There's less practice with portion control. You know, you're more likely to overconsume, and you'd probably be better just repeating over and over and over again so that you kind of practice that habit routine.
I agree. Yeah. I do 100% agree. And I know that there are probably foodies out there that would say, how boring is Nick?
Mm.
She's so boring. And yes, that is correct. I am boring. But I just know that you can't play around with these things too much.
The next question here is about hunger, mm-hmm. right? And we always get questions about hunger. And this question was, you know, I'm really hungry. What do I do?
Yeah.
And first thing I'd say is that it's super normal. It's absolutely very normal to experience some hunger. That's, I guess, part of the dieting process where there is some challenges. And there's a reason why we design our programs in a way to be quite satisfying, where we're trying to make you feel full so that you're less likely to experience those hunger pains. Because we know that when you are feeling hungry, you're more likely to binge eat or face diet fatigue and these types of challenges along the way. Now, I think the first thing I'd say is if you are experiencing hunger is to determine if you're actually hungry, because hunger is often triggered in a few ways that we don't think about. Firstly, it's by our hormones like leptin and ghrelin, and they can be skewed by things like poor sleep. We know if we have poor quality sleep, it kind of changes those hormones around.
So true.
Which can make us feel hungry.
Yeah.
Next, things like habitual cues. So let's say you eat every day at 8 a.m., midday, and then 5 p.m., that's your routine. If you kind of miss that, your body's going to release certain hormones at those times for you to be hungry. So if you are, you know, maybe you had a late breakfast and then you were planning to have your lunch at 2 o'clock, but it's midday, no wonder you're hungry because your body is expecting food at that time. There are some reflexes that can trigger hunger. So there's like, if you have a genuine empty stomach, your body can be like, oh, I'm hungry because my stomach's empty. And let's say you had something like a liquid meal, like a smoothie, and you consume that and your body kind of passed that through your stomach, moving into the small intestine. Yeah, you probably feel hungry, even though you might not need food. But if you compare that to another meal, let's say like a really high fiber meal, your body's, you know, slowly mechanically breaking down that food in your stomach, you're not going to feel that experience of hunger because your stomach is genuinely full because you had a kilo of lettuce, right? Yeah. And then of course there are like, let's say, lifestyle cues or habitual cues. So like if you have a habit of drinking your coffee and then you have breakfast, if you were to drink the coffee, your body would start releasing hunger hormones to make you be hungry because it's expecting breakfast, right? It's just like how you train your dogs, right? Where, you know, my dogs train me perfectly where she wakes me up and then she knows that she goes to the toilet and she gets breakfast. So once she gets me out of bed, she's like, okay, yeah, we're gonna be eating soon. And that's classic like Pavlov's dogs.
Yeah, kind of that's thing. Like my bunnies. Every day when I get up at 5, I go in to the shed to just check how they're going and I give them some pellets. They know that that's what they get. That's their first little thing. So even bunnies feel that way.
They do. Yeah. So I think it's important to determine if you're actually hungry or if there's some other cue that's happening in your body or if there's like a bit of a breakdown somewhere in that system. Next, it's probably best that you, let's say, consume some water first, because often when we're thirsty, that can often, our brains have a hard time telling the difference between thirsty and hungry. So if you were to drink some water, wait maybe 5 or 10 minutes and determine if you're actually hungry. Something like having a cup of tea can always be a nice way to kind of distract you a little bit before you go and eat. Next, I'd recommend that you do something physical, like maybe do some chores around the house or go for a walk or do some light activity. You might find that your body was just looking for something stimulating to do from that boredom side of things. Then if you were at the point where you are hungry and you need to eat something, we're going to be looking for like a low calorie option. That often involves things like our fruits and vegetables. So really classic kind of bodybuilding style snacks would be things like, you know, chopped carrots, chopped capsicums, chopped celery, that type of stuff. You know, things that have a crunch. We like a good crunch.
Not even chopped.
Not even chopped straight in there.
Capsicum. Yeah. I just have been like known to apple. Eat a full capsicum.
Yeah. So, you know, there are some like low calorie foods that can give us that satisfying crunch that won't break the bank. Might add an extra 20 or 30 calories to your total daily intake, which isn't going to be the end of the world. But if that curbs your hunger, and which could lead you to a binge eating episode where you have, you know, like 1,000 calories, which can happen really easily. So if you choose to have some of these low calorie option foods, even if they're readily available, like, you know, you wash and chop them up and have them in little containers or something for those hungry times. Now, I do think after all that process, it's a great time to, yes, review, you know, why you were hungry. So you can reflect, you know, are the calories too low for you at the moment? You know, are you having enough protein at the time? Is your nutrition timing correct? Or even things like, you know, are you sleeping well? Is that why you're hungry today? Are you eating too quickly? Because we know that if you're distracted or not eating mindfully, that can change the way that we're satisfied with our food intake. So it's a great time to review why you're hungry. And sometimes there could be an area for you to improve your nutrition.
Yeah, definitely, like the timing of it. Even if you don't have a whole bunch of calories available as we get towards the end, you know, where we are on lower calories, so hunger is normal, you can definitely tweak the times that you're consuming those calories. And yeah, your little hacks like your capsicums and stuff are fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know you're really hungry if you're going to eat a raw capsicum just on its own, bang, like that. You can actually, it's fun because then you know, you're like, okay, I really am hungry right on now. You know, like they're nice, but it's just, you've got to be really hungry to eat one. It's like when you tell your kids, if you were really hungry, you'd have a piece of fruit. You know that saying, it's the same
thing. Oh yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. I'm hungry, I don't want to eat that. I'm hungry, I don't like anything in here. But yeah, just speak to yourself in the same way as you would. You know, if your kid came into the kitchen and said that they were hungry, it's like, what would you say to them? It's sort of pretty similar. If you were really hungry, you'd have a yellow capsicum, but that's a treat too.
That's a treat.
Normally there's only green ones available.
The yellow ones are quite sweet too. Yeah. I was going to say, when I was prepping for my bodybuilding show a few years ago and I was experiencing those hunger pains, I was like, oh, what am I going to eat? Now I opened up the fridge and there was a jar of chilies. So I just started munching on the chilies, right?
You were that hungry.
I was that hungry. And I personally, you know, grew up eating lots of chilies. Yeah. So like for me, chilies are almost like sweet. They're not really spicy.
Yeah, you're used to it.
But then I guess the, you know, the spice in the chili or the capsaicin would, you know, kind of like sit in your mouth for a while. And that was enough just to stimulate my mouth. And I was like, oh, I'm not really hungry anymore. And I've had like, you know, 5-10 chilies or something like that, which would have been maybe, like, you know, 10 or 20 calories. But like that burning sensation in my mouth was like, oh yeah, okay, this is great.
That's the best. Yeah. So yeah, chili eating contest.
So if you're experiencing those hunger pains, just get that bag of chili or jar of chili and just start munching away. Yeah. And I'm sure that you'll give you something to do with your mouth. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's too funny.
Now look, you know, talking about chili, a question that came up on the forum this week was, how do you add flavor to quinoa? And I guess we can answer this by expanding it out to how do you add flavor to almost any meal.
Yeah.
But Nick, do you want to answer this one? Because it kind of links with what you spoke about earlier about changing meals.
That's right. So yeah, a big hack for people that don't have a lot of variety, maybe with their protein sources or, you know, they have basic foods, is to really play around with I'm saying natural flavors that you can add. So naturally occurring things. Although hot sauce isn't one of them, but I'm thinking of like if I was, just say I had to get a meal somewhere at like a sandwich shop and I was going to choose something that I know isn't going to be heavy in calories, the hot sauce is one of them that's unsweetened. Anyway, chili flakes was something that I always like. I'm like you, I like a bit of chili.
Mm-hmm.
So your lemons, your limes, salt, pepper. Mm-hmm. chopped herbs. That's the other thing that sometimes we forget. There are so many different chopped herbs. I mean, a lot of people don't like coriander, but that does pack a flavour punch if you do.
Mm-hmm.
Parsley, I'm very Italian, so parsley, basil,
mm-hmm.
you know, even mint. You know, it actually turns you into an awesome cook. These herbs are the secret. Mm. You can chuck all of that on a chicken. Now, in Italian, it's oregano, but I think it's oregano in your language.
My language? Gosh. Oregano, mate, come on.
Some words I don't know how to say in English.
Unless you're like in the US, maybe it's oregano.
Yeah, oregano. Yeah. Then we've got garlic. Garlic's epic, except if you're coming into the office to hang out, like on a Tuesday, maybe. Oh, whatever. I don't care. Yeah, hot sauce. And then somebody actually mentioned, this wasn't me that made this one up, but it's very, very true. You can cook it in a chicken stock or a beef stock or a vegetable stock. So that just naturally adds a little bit of flavour as well.
Yeah, I do that with rice.
That's right. I remember that trick. I haven't done that for a while, but that is a good one just to add that little bit of flavour. And it's a little bit, it's got that little bit of a, an extra bite to a bit of brothy taste. And then, so condiments as well. So we should talk about those because I don't know about you, I don't like tomato sauce. I'm not a tomato sauce person. Are you a tomato sauce person?
Not really, no.
Okay, because I don't know what it is. Even when I was at school, if I was to ever get a sausage roll or a pie or anything like that, I would never have sauce, always without sauce. I'm not an Aussie in that way. I don't like, I guess it's just the idea of the sweet. I'm not sure what it is, but some people love sauce. So I've seen hacks about now in Coles, they do have your low sugar barbecue and tomato sauces. So I'd be looking for those. I wouldn't waste calories on a sauce. Being an Italian, I'd probably just have passata, which is just the ground up tomatoes as a tomato kind of a base or sauce. But yeah, that's for the people that are actually not like me, that actually do like tomato sauce. So they do have some options now for those sorts of things. Then we've got our mustards, our mustard varieties.
I'm a sucker for mustard.
Yeah, see, I like mustard too. I like mustard too. So that's always something that you should keep in mind. So I've been known to have, I could eat this right now, like just a chicken breast with some mustard and some rice, like beautiful, gorgeous. Be aware that something like your soy actually has quite a lot of sodium in it. And also a certain, you don't want to get too pedantic, but it's got a certain amount of carbs as well. So you don't want to shove soy on everything. And that's starting to get into the, I'm sounding like a wine person, but we're getting into the darker varieties of sauces here. So we've got our teriyakis and our plums and things like that. They are heavier in the calories, and also just the, you're starting to get into those more artificial ingredients. So I'd be giving them a bit of a berth. I'd be going for the mustards. I'd be going for the, if you have to, the low sugar or zero sugar if you can find tomato or barbecue sauces if they're your jam. Mm. And yeah, I'd be steering towards, there's a lot that you can do with a salt, with a stock, with some herbs and some salt and pepper. Oh yeah, and also oils. That's the other thing. Like my dad would, he doesn't understand. He would seriously put like 10 litres of olive oil on something and say, it's the Mediterranean diet. See, I grew up with putting the 10 litres of olive oil on things. It was only when I became really serious about looking at what calories were and I realised, whoa, that's like almost a day's worth of eating that we're chucking on this thing. So, and Dad would also do something like, he's a very much of a Parmesan cheese person. So a lot of people, like even my daughters, they like to put a whole bunch of Parmesan on things to flavour it. So you just got to watch out for the cheesy things.
Mm.
Once you start to go into the cheesy things, that's where we're starting to really pile on extra calories that we may not necessarily need. Because don't forget that also that these things aren't really going to fill you up. So you're still going to be hungry after consuming the sauces and things. And in fact, like say a teriyaki and something can actually make you feel even hungrier because it's very high in sugar. We're right now talking about it. But.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I think when it comes to condiments, I would almost say almost anything is on the table, but you just need to be aware of the calories that can be foods. And a classic one that we see is someone begins a dieting process, they have like a really great salad in front of them, and they go and grab the Thousand Island dressing or like the, you know, whatever salad dressing they have.
Mayonnaise,
that's right. That and then just, you know, drown it in it. And they would think, oh yeah, you know, this is healthy, this is good, this is a salad. And it's like, well, yeah, you've got, you know, 100 calories of vegetables in front of you, but then you've added an extra 1,000 calories of dressing. And you probably don't even know that you're consuming those extra calories. So I think the first step is just to become aware. And a really classic one is start reading the labels on things. Like for me, you know, we have a variety of sauces in the cupboard and I would go out and, you know, grab whatever I feel like for the day. You know, I've got a barbecue sauce, I've got a tomato sauce, I've got a mustard and I don't often reach for the condiments cupboard, but it's there and sometimes I'll put a little bit on there. Am I a bad person because I have that? No. But I'm aware because I look at the label. The other challenge that we face with some condiments are, like what you said, one would be like sugar content because they make the sauces sweeter and that just adds calories to it. Two would be sort of like fat content of it. And we know that fats itself are higher in calories than sugar. So if you were to have like an oil-based condiment, that's just going to add more and more calories to the food. And then thirdly, for our just general health, is just to be aware of our sodium intake. And I did speak a little bit about sodium in our last podcast, but we do know that, you know, too much sodium, especially if you're not aware of it, like if you're chucking soy sauce on everything, okay, yeah, you might face some problems later because of such a high sodium intake. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's fine in moderation, but yeah, it's just those little 1%ers just to think of. If you're like, wait a minute, my weight's not shifting, but I do like to have, you know, mayonnaise on all my sandwiches and stuff. You just have a think, just think about that, because that could be adding, you know, an extra 100 or 200 calories to your day.
Yeah,
if you were to absolutely do that. So easy to take away too.
And I do think that when we begin a dieting process, we kind of have this assumption that we need to eat, you know, bland food, or we need to have the chicken and broccoli meals for every meal, and you know that flavor is now a bad thing. And I do think that you can create really tasty foods from really simple foods. And if you look at something as simply as, let's say, a meal like chicken and broccoli, you can recreate that chicken, you know, 100 different times using a variety of different herbs and spices to put on that chicken, and it will be taste different every single time. And I'm not really a chef, but I would use a whole bunch of different things depending on what I feel like. I might add some spice to it, I might add some herbs to it, some lemon, some garlic, these types of things to recreate the chicken. And then with the broccoli, you know, you can create that in a banquet of different ways in the exact same style. So every time you have chicken and broccoli, it could be like a different meal by changing some of the herbs and spices that you use. So
that's right. Have you ever had roasted broccoli? It's actually really yummy. Mm. So that's one that people might not think about doing, but
I'm a sucker for when we make broccoli, we cut off the florets of the broccoli, and then there's the stem. And then what I'll do is I'll dice the stem up and then put it in a fry pan, fry it up, and then crack eggs into it. So I'll have like a scrambled egg broccoli stalk. And then like while you're eating the eggs, it's like crunchy.
That sounds really nice.
Or even like things that, like, you know, like pumpkin skin. So if you're ever making pumpkin, you chop the skin off and you could roast that in the oven with a little bit of salt, maybe a little bit of paprika. You can make like little chips out of the pumpkin skin. Yeah, so there's lots you could do. And I guess you're only limited by your own creativity. And I guess I'm not a chef. I don't know if you're a chef.
No.
We did spend a lot of time with Rob from Explosive Custom Macros, and he created a bunch of videos for us. You can find them on the Challenge website. And you know, his biggest tip that he told me was lemon. And he's like, add lemon into like everything you cook and it just brings out the flavor of stuff. So that was his advice as a chef, is to add a little bit of lemon into things.
There you go. Yeah.
If you've got a neighbor that has a lemon tree and they're giving you bags of lemons, just go get some lemon and add a little bit of lemon into your foods and you might notice a little bit of a difference.
That's awesome. Shane comes back from every dog walk with a lemon.
With a lemon?
He's just a lemon collector. And rosemary from other places. I don't know, around the Burwood area.
Little sidetrack story. On the weekend, I went out a little bit regionally to a place called Jembrook in Melbourne, southeast, and drove past a massive, huge kiwi fruit tree. Have you ever seen a kiwi fruit tree?
No.
It looked like a giant, like almost weed, right?
Really?
Like a massive weed. It was like, you know, twice as tall as me and as like long as like a bus. And it was just covered in kiwi fruit.
On the side of the road?
Yeah. Just
available for everybody.
And it was just covered like crazy. Like if you looked at it, you would have easily counted hundreds of kiwi fruit on there. So I went up, grabbed a couple and took them home, and they were just like the sweetest kiwi fruit I've had
in a really long time. That is the best thing ever.
Yeah. It was just a very, very, I personally never seen a kiwi fruit tree. So if you've seen a kiwi fruit tree or any other exotic fruits, let us know.
Especially really cool. If you've seen the one that Steve went to.
Yeah. Go check it out. All right. Look, final question here, which was a question that came up. And a challenger has experienced a pulled hammy. So they pulled their hammy and they wanted a bit of advice from us on what to do.
Yep.
So I thought I'd answer this one, both with my fitness cap on, but then also as my healthcare professional cap as well. And I think the first thing that I would say is that pulling a hammy means different things to different people. It could be just a muscle strain. It could be a muscle tear. It could be something else. It could just be maybe an entrapment of like a sciatic nerve. It could mean lots of different things. So the first step, the initial step is, my advice is to consult a registered allied healthcare professional. Mm-hmm. Now, what that means is that it might not be best to go and see your, you know, masseuse, because they might not be trained in that type of thing, or to go see your local friend who is, you know, whatever type of therapy they might do. It's probably best to go see a registered allied healthcare professional, someone who might have gone and done some further studies in this type of area. And I guess what we would do, so if you went and came and saw me and you pulled a hammy, is we would first determine, you know, is it actually the hamstring, right? So we might do some muscle strength tests, muscle length tests, and then determine if we have experienced, let's say, a muscle strain. And then we can grade that. So grade one would be like a light, you know, maybe some tears in the muscle fibers. Grade two would be more severe. And then grade three would be a complete rupture where we need to reattach it. So in this case, we would say maybe it would be like a grade one muscle strain on the hamstring, often through, let's say, like maybe a running activity or something like that. The first thing that we want to do is kind of deload the structures in the area, because the body's going to heal itself. If you've had a muscle strain, everybody's probably had a muscle strain in their life. We want to just deload the area so the body can start its healing process, because if you're constantly hammering that hamstring, hammering at 10 out of 10 effort, the body might be in a position to heal at that stage. So we just go through a little bit of a deload process. That doesn't mean that we would want to completely take away all muscle work in that hamstring. We want to be some sort of light work in that hamstring group. And we would often have some modifications to that where, okay, maybe we can train the hamstring while it's not in a completely lengthened state. So a full lengthened state of the hamstring would be at knee extensions, the legs straight, and then at hip flexion. So the classic would be gonna touch your toes, stretching the hamstring. Mm-hmm. If you were to load that in that position, let's say in an RDL, okay, that might be a bit sore, a bit painful, and might be challenging some of the integrity of the muscle fibers. Okay, maybe you're better off training the hamstrings in a slightly shortened position, like let's say a seated hamstring curl. Mm-hmm. Still getting some hamstring activations, but you're not really stretching that hamstring in a really long position. Okay.
Yeah, because it's always, would you say, like very often movement, you need to keep moving things.
That's right.
Just stopping altogether.
That's right.
Yeah.
And yeah, like there is an element of like a deload where we can't just, you know, keep going like nothing's happened.
Yeah.
We do need to go through a little bit of a reduction, but, you know, stopping it completely probably faces more problems than it solves, right?
Yeah.
Next, you know, we can look at the actual recovery. So if we look at a textbook, most soft tissue injuries take between, you know, 3 to 21 days to heal. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at maybe at most kind of like this 3-week period of healing, but there's lots of variables to that. So often they're closely linked to the same variables that we face with hypertrophy. So if you've got poor quality sleep, poor quality nutrition, that's going to slow down your healing time. If you're smoking, if you're drinking, that's going to slow down healing time. If you're like older in age, it's going to slow down healing time. And that's exactly the same as, you know, hypertrophy. If you're young, fit, nailing your sleep, nailing your nutrition, all these like boxes of ticks, great, you're going to recover really well and see all the gains in the gym.
Yeah.
And it's the same as an injury where, you know, we're basically getting the body to heal itself.
Mm.
So that's why it's a really broad window. It could be 3 days, or it could be up to 3 weeks, or even more so, where it could take a really long time. Then once we've kind of gone through this bit of a deload period where the pain starts to decrease, we can start to first get pain-free range of motion. So we're looking at getting that muscle to lengthen without severe pain, and slowly going through like a rebuilding phase. So we've kind of gone through a deload, and then we're going through a reload phase where we're slowly adding load to those muscle fibers so that we can establish some cross bridges through the muscle and changing the nerve pathway in the muscle so we can get that muscle recruitment again.
So if you were a runner, would you start by just walking?
Yeah. So I think like it's hard in physical therapy because the answer is always it depends.
Yeah.
Because, you know, someone who comes in with a hamstring tear, if they're a footy player, a sprinter, a marathon runner, and a weightlifter, that's going to be a different kind of protocol.
Yeah,
so, and then each individual is going to tolerate different loads differently. So let's say myself, if I'm going to deadlift, you know, 250 kilos, pull my hammy, I might be able to tolerate 100 kilos on a deadlift and be like, this is fine, versus another individual who their max on a deadlift is 100 kilos.
Yeah.
They might not even be able to touch their toes without lifting their body weight up.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It is definitely scaling. So probably the biggest introduction would be something like walking so that we get that blood flow moving, these types of things. But I do think it's important to start to determine the cause of that hamstring tear. Often it's an overload issue where the hamstring's working too hard. We know that muscles really struggle under eccentric load, which is why runners often experience that hamstring tear. It isn't when they're actually sprinting, it's when they're slowing down, because the hamstring acts eccentrically to slow us down. So that's when we kind of like really challenge the muscle, when we can actually get a little bit of a tear happening in that eccentric portion. Then we also know that hamstrings, because they're a hip extender as well as a knee flexor, they extend the hip behind us. Another muscle that also extends the hip is the glutes, the glute groups. Sometimes we face hamstring problems when our glutes become quote, quote, lazy or not as dominant, and we become more hamstring dominant. Poor hamstrings are working hard to do everything. Your glutes are just going along for the ride.
That's right.
So sometimes process of glute strengthening can be beneficial to treat the hamstring, because then the glute will be taking some of the load off of the hamstring so the hamstring can recover. And then, of course, there's a few other areas we want to look at, let's say like ankle range of motion, lower back range of motion, and some of the nerves that come out of the lower back into the hamstring as well. So a little bit more to it, but essentially the big takeaways is, one, maybe you want to go through a slight deload period before you reload. Two, it could be up to 3 weeks where we're experiencing some pain or discomfort. Think about lifestyle factors and how you promote your recovery and training. It's the same thing with recovering an injury. One of the things we want to avoid is complete inactivity, where we want to do some sort of physical activity, let that be just simply walking, where we're getting the blood flow to the area, clearing out some of the inflammation that's caused, and these types of things that we can promote healing, basically. Mm-hmm. But the big takeaway is to go see a healthcare professional. Definitely. Just to make sure we know what's going on.
Yeah, because they can advise you of all these things as well.
That's right.
It's important in the flesh for this stuff.
That's right. And I think, you know, part of exercising is that we are likely to face some aches and pains along the way. It's just like driving a car, right? You buy a car, if you keep driving it, you're going to have to replace the wheels and give it a service and top up the fuel and add water to the window wipers and replace the window wipers. And these are just normal things that we accept.
We don't freak out about that sort of stuff.
And the same thing with training, where we're likely to experience some aches and pains along the way. And this isn't a bad thing. These are just almost like part of growing pains. And it almost should be excited, right? And once we get into a point where we have experienced these kind of like small aches and pains consistently, you know, we get better at managing them. For example, me today, right now, what was the first thing I said to you, Nick, this morning? I was like, oh, my neck's a bit sore.
Yeah.
I was bench pressing this morning and I lost position in a couple of the reps and like my neck's a little bit sore. Am I stressing out about it? No. I know that tomorrow it's going to be fine. And heck, I know how to treat myself. So yeah, I, you know, adjusted my neck a couple of times and it's fine. Yeah. Happy days on my way. But as you kind of experience, you know, the cause, why I lost position. Great. Steve, you're an idiot. Lost your position. Don't lose your position, right? And then two, I kind of know how to manage these symptoms that I can get back in the gym.
I know. It feels good to know these things about yourself as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's things that like maybe years ago you would have freaked out about. But as you get to know your body a lot more, you kind of go, oh, there's that niggle. Okay, this is how I have to manage this. Oh, hang on a minute.
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing wrong that's led to this bit? You
know, that's
what's
right.
What's going on?
That's right.
Yeah.
And when I see patients who have injured themselves, it's never really like a one-time thing. You know, it's like a build-up of lots of these kind of niggles, which we kind of described as a non-time loss injury. So where you injure yourselves, but you haven't really lost any time. You'd still go train, you still do life. You're like, oh yeah, it doesn't really impact me, but something's not quite right. And it's a build-up of all these like non-time loss activities. And then there's an incident, right? An example would be me with my bench press. You know, it wasn't because I kind of like lost that position that one time. It was a culmination of me consistently losing my position. Maybe my scapula kept popping out with that bench press, so that I probably benefit from doing some strengthening work in that scapula, keeping positions so that I don't lose the positions so that I, you know, injure my neck next time. Yep. So it's a combination of all these things. It's never really just like a one-time incident.
Exactly. Right? Oh, lucky you've got your video that you recorded yourself to refer to now. You can see taking us right back
to back
record your training.
And you can see it, you know, it was like the second rep of the second set.
Yeah.
And as I go to lift, you can kind of see like my right shoulder just move a little bit more. That's all it took, right? Under that load, just took that little bit of a movement. And then I like kind of reset my shoulders and I went. And it wasn't until I finished my session that I was like, oh man, like it's a little bit sore. And that's okay. Like I'm not stressing out about it. No. That's okay. We learn, we move on. But yeah, that's how to manage an injury or what to do if you pulled a hammy.
Wow. Lots of info for everybody today.
Lots of info. But look, let's wrap it up there. Guys, if you've enjoyed episode number 23 of the Challenge Weekly Show, let us know. You can leave us a review on iTunes, or you can let us know that you've been listening to the podcast either on our Facebook group or sharing it on your Instagram page.
Love
you can
that.
Tag us. Tag me at Stephen Escaff, and you can tag Nick
at Nicoletta Cepellini.
They can spell that one out.
Yeah,
so you'll find
that. You'll find it. Just go Nicoletta, and then you'll be out of.
You'll find that information on the notes of this podcast. Yep. So thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you, guys.